This is the New World Report with Professor Evan Ellis of the U.S. Army War College for CBSI on the World. Professor, drama again in Peru. Pedro Castillo, the man with the big hat, elected some months ago, making promises, and the promises are reflected in his choices of cabinet members. Early on, we talked at length about how he was choosing ex-guerrillas, or let's put it this way, men and women who were sympathetic to disorder in Peru, in the region, in all of the New World. Since then, however, we've learned that there have been new cabinet members every 9 days. There's been a new cabinet, a position. So the early read that this was going to be a cabinet that reflected, say, Havana, has now been mitigated by choices that reflect everything else, leading to disorder in the parliament. And the second attempt to impeach, that is remove, Pedro Castillo, the man with the big hat. We have this from Lima in these last hours. Pedro Castillo, Peru's embattled president, avoided joining the South American nation's list of impeached leaders as opposition lawmakers this Monday night, failed to get enough votes to remove him from office 8 months into his term. Castillo, writes the Associated Press, a political neophyte who shook the country when he defeated the political elite to become president, survived his second impeachment attempt. President Castillo characterized the accusations against him as speculation and argued that none could be substantiated. Now, the numbers suggest that there was no drive to eliminate him because the legislature certainly had the votes talking these last weeks. They had the votes to remove him. Two parts. Pedro Castillo, when he's called a neophyte, is that accurate, or can we determine what influence he is under? And two, why did they continue him, given that we know they had the votes to remove him?
John, with respect to Castillo, I think the most important characterization is he is really somebody that had, as you pointed out, very little experience coming from a relatively neglected rural area, Cajamarca. He was a school teacher, very little profile in national politics other than he had played some role as a minor social leader. He was really brought into this by a Cuba-trained ideologue, Vladimir Serón, who probably expected that Castillo's inexperience and newness would set him up as a puppet which Serón could control. Now, that turned out not to be the case. Some of the more leftist people that Serón and his party, Free Peru, wanted to get Castillo to go with. Castillo went with some of them, didn't go with others. There was a lot of pushback because some of the conservatives in Peruvian politics have a great deal of fear of the guerrillas, the leftists back from the very bloody civil war that they fought. But what ended up happening is that as Castillo tried to be his own man and tried to bring in his friends from his small town Cajamarca background, it really showed all of those hidden dirty laundry things that you get when you bring small town politics to the national center. And so he was bringing in people with ties to corruption in the past, ties to spousal abuse, ties to various different guerrilla movement or associated movements like MOVEDEF. And so at the same time as he did that, you also had a very fragmented right, groups like the Apristas, groups like Keiko Fujimori's party, Fuerza Popular, that although they didn't necessarily want a more coherent alternative, they didn't want to see Castillo succeed. And so what you have is an inexperienced politician bringing in very bad people in his cabinet and a very sophisticated right, which is just plucking them off and really taking them down one after another. And so you just get this churn, 46 ministers in 8 months, four cabinets with no end in sight. And so while the idea of this sustained ungovernability in Peru is worrisome, also many of the parties, they don't want Castillo to go forward, but frighteningly, they also don't want to bring his government completely down in a way that could bring somebody who is more competent and more orderly that might actually go against their interests.
Peru is a miner's heaven. Gold, silver, copper, everything. All the mining for the last several hundred years, right? I mean, they've been mining in Peru since the New World was part of the conversation in Europe. But I read here that his second prime minister, Mirta Vasquez announced at some point in these last months, let's see what the date here is, in November, late 2021, that the government was going to close 4 gold and silver mines as soon as possible, which frightened everybody. Why and how does Peru become predictable if sometimes you have cabinet members who are going to close a source of income for private investment, and sometimes you're going to have the president removing them? It would appear, I don't mean to joke about this, but there's something about Peru that's become odd, as in comical, like an opera, like a Gilbert and Sullivan opera. Is Castillo used by people? Do we think he's totally naive and has no idea of the effect of his choices or removals?
Well, Don, with respect to mining, really all up and down the Andean Ridge, those mountains there, including Chile, including Bolivia, including to some extent Ecuador, but certainly Peru, you just have an amazing wealth of mineral resources. Copper, iron, to a certain degree, of course, lithium for new car batteries, and you have a certain amount of petroleum as well as a wealth of other things. And so for Peru, for many, many years, mining has been, as you pointed out, the core of its economy. There are debates from, you know, among indigenous and others that the question of what they call the ownership of the subsoil. Who owns and who should benefit from what is beneath the ground. So you've always had a combination of mining playing a big role with big mining companies, but also the question of the environmental damages, impacting the local water supply involved with the mining activities themselves, the treatment of local communities by the mining companies. And so you've always had these social disputes. And so again, with being from one of these remote mining areas, Cajamarca, some of the people that Castillo has sympathized with, brought in, have been people who see the miners as exploiters. And so, for example, Mirta Vasquez, who came in and had some unfortunate comments about shutting down a couple problematic gold mining and silver mines, again, that set off a firestorm, not so much because of the specific mines, which I understand were problematic, but because of the broader fear that many people had of the politics of Castillo, that this was only the beginning of a shutdown of one of Peru's core industries. So I really see this as more inexperience and really just stepping into political firestorms teed up by sophisticated alternative elites more than anything else. Castillo really has tried very hard not to become completely dependent on the Cuba-trained left of Vladimir Cerrón. And yet at the same time, he's also tried to be his own person and reflect some of the values that he, again, brought from small-town Cajamarca. So I think with a relative lack of experience, he's actually done a not entirely poor job of trying to be his own person, but he is up against, I think, very, very high odds, and he continues to make choices that reflect some of those dilemmas in Peruvian history and the Peruvian economics and in Peruvian politics. And the situation with mining is only the latest of those.
33 million people, and 8 months ago, you helped me to understand how close the election was with Keiko Fujimori, the daughter of a previous president who was jailed for corruption. But in any event, the election was decided after threats were back and forth by 72,000 votes out of all cast. And Castillo comes into power. And then we begin the merry-go-round of cabinet appointments. Is he left? Is he right? Is he center? Does he know what he's doing? However, what is consistent is that Keiko Fujimori and her supporters, I think they're called the Popular Force in Spanish, remain doubtful that Castillo can be successful. Is it in their interest, this Popular Force, to keep him on the ropes until the next election cycle? Is it in their interest to undermine the ability of Peru to prosper? Or are they waging this low-level opposition because they don't want the left wing of the government to take control? Is there an explanation?
First, probably it's important to recognize that Peruvian politics are very fragmented right now. And as a matter of fact, it was really the number of different candidates that made it very idiosyncratic that this relatively unknown party and candidate, Castillo, made it in one of basically the two that gets to run in the runoff election. And so that was partly how we got to this. So having said that, Fuerza Popular, although there are many others, there are the priestas, there are, there is the perception that Fujimori, whose father was actually previous president, Alberto Fujimori, who was seen as having done relatively good things in restoring order against the terrorists, Sendero Luminoso, but who's also come to be seen as is symbolic of this broader kind of, again, the corrupt, the establishment, the Limeños, all of the other parties beyond Fuerza Popular. So there is that sense. But the dilemma, Peru's constitution is very idiosyncratic. And one of the things is that if a president is basically denied two major what they call votes of confidence, he then can dissolve Congress and rule by decree. On top of that, however, the Congress people cannot run again. And so basically, if Congress says no to the president two times, then the president can actually dissolve Congress. This came up with Vizcarra as well, one of the previous presidents. And that means Congress basically shoots themselves in the foot because by refusing the president twice, they essentially end their own political career and you get a new group of corrupt politicians that come on. So the there's always this issue of you don't want to deny the president the second time something that he really wants because that could end your own opportunities for corruption. So you see this delicate dance of trying to paralyze Castillo and yet at the same time, all of the different corrupted parties and establishment parties don't want to take it so far that they end their own political sinecures in the Congress and take Peru into uncharted territory.
I'm speaking with Professor Evan Ellis of the U.S. Army War College Strategic Studies Institute about Peru, where the election was decided. And it remains the question about whether the new president, Pedro Castillo, can govern. I mentioned, of course, that he promised to sell the palace when he was president. The last I checked, he lives in the palace. So there are inconsistencies here that are both major and minor. We're going to turn to another election that has not been decided. There are two huge elections in the New World in 2022. Colombia's, which is upcoming at the end of May, the presidential election, where a man who's associated with the left, the famous left, is leading in the polls. And the second in the fall in Brazil, we're going to turn to Brazil because President Bolsonaro, a man associated with the right, has launched his re-election campaign, presenting it as good versus evil. The New World Report, I'm John Bashley.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Bachelor.